plus the Cal verb perfect first common singer yada, y-a-d-a-a, yada. I do not know the day of my death, literally. Common masculine singer struct noun, our word for day is yom, y-o-m, plus the common masculine singer construct noun with the first common singer suffix, our word for death, maweth, m-a-w-e-t-h. Verse 3, now then, please take your gear, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me. Vowel conjunction, followed with the adverb atah, A-T-T-A-H. And now, please take your gear. You have the cow imperative, masculine singer. Our verb translated to take here is nasa, N-A-S-A, lift up, carry, take. Then you have the interjectory particle na, again, N-A, now or immediately. Don't waste your time here. Your gear is the common masculine plural construct with the second masculine singular suffix, keli, K-E-L-I-Y. Literally, it's an article or utensil. Here, hunting utensil, hence gear. In the plural, gear. All that's necessary. Then he articulates each of the pieces. He had a first common masculine singular noun construct, second masculine singular suffix, telly, T-E, L-I-Y, your quiver, that which holds the arrows, a vowel conjunction, and then your bow, a common feminine singular noun construct with second masculine singular suffix, kesheth, K-Q-E-S-H-E-T-H, and vowel conjunction, go out to. You had the cow imperative masculine singular yatsa, y-a-t-s-a. The field, definite article, or noun for field, common masculine singular absolute, shadeh, s-h-a-d-e-h. And hunt, game for me. You have our verb first to hunt with the wow conjunction, cow imperative masculine singular tasud. T-S-A-U-D, for me, is a preposition lama with the first common singular suffix in our noun for game, or provision, food, common feminine singular absolute, tase-da, T-S-E-Y-D-A-H. Verse 4, and prepare a savory dish for me, such as I love. Prepare or make or do. You have the wow conjunction, cal imperative, masculine singular, our verb to do, asah, A-S-A-H. For me, preposition lamed with the first common singular suffix. And then our words translated as savory dish is the common masculine and plural absolute noun, matha am, M-A-T-H-E-A-M, tasty food, hence savory dish, such as I love, such as your preposition kaf, K-A-P-H, like, followed with your relative pronoun as share, A-S-H-E-R, which, like which, hence such, such as, I love is the common, is the cow perfect first common singular verb, ahav, A-H-A-B. And bring it to me. You have vowel conjunction. Our verb to bring is a hifil, which is causative, imperative, masculine singular, or word bo, B-O, cause to bring, followed with the preposition lamed, to me, with the first common singular suffix. And let me eat is the vowel conjunction with the coordinative use of the cal imperfect first common singular verb, a call. I didn't put it in there. A-C-A-L, a call. That I may eat, so that my soul may bless you before I die. So that, you have the preposition bet, followed with the preposition abur, B-E-T plus abur, A-B-U-R, in that, so that I will bless you. You have the PL, imperfect third feminine singular verb with the second masculine singular suffix or word to bless, again, barak. B-A-R-A-K. I will bless you. That blessing coming from my soul. Common feminine singular construct. It's not in the English. That my soul in the English is with the first common singular suffix noun, nephesh, a word for soul, N-E-P-H-E-S-H. Before I die, you have the preposition bet plus the adverb of time here, therem, T-H-E-R-E-M, literally not yet or before that, hence before. I will die is a cal imperfect first common singular verb, muth, M-U-T-H. Reading verses 1 through 4. And now it came about when Isaac was old, and his eyes were darkened from seeing. His eyes became dim. And he called his older son Esau and said to him, my son. And he, Esau, said to him, behold me. And Isaac said, verse 2, behold, now I am old, and I do not know the day of my death. Verse 3, now then, please take your gear, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me. And verse 4, and prepare tasty food or a savory dish for me, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, so that my soul may bless you before I die. All right, the analysis verses 1 through 4. 1, chapter 27 now, getting back here into the text, expounds upon the lack of peace in Isaac's household in contrast to the previous peace accord with Abimelech, ushering in the close of chapter 26, verses 26 through 34. We touched on this ending that chapter, this principle, but as a reminder, it follows the peace accord, so it denotes a stark contrast. So too, lack of a harmonious household was epitomized in the bitterness of soul brought to him and Rebekah via the negative pagan wives of Esau that then closed chapter 26 and verses 34 through 35. The purpose of those two verses, Esau being 40 years old when he married Judith, the daughter of Beri the Hittite, Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they brought grief of soul to Isaac and Rebekah. The purpose of those two verses was to show this dark contrast, introduce this dark contrast to the peace, external peace, that Isaac was able to accomplish and have in regards to Abimelech and the Philistines. with his own internal residence and home, his household, in that vein. So, again, one area of his life, we see a great blessing, the accomplishment. Now, another area of his life, we see something that is not so desirable, and that is obviously a relationship with his wife, Rebecca, that was, if you will, not the greatest of husband and wife in terms of getting along, etc. So, chapter 27 picks up on that now, and it shows us that very scenario as a result in regards to their two sons, Esau and Jacob. So, three, now while Esau's two wives, Judith and Basemath, verse 34, chapter 26 there, were products introducing grief, the cause stemmed from Esau's negative volition and rebellion of the covenant traditions for marriage. They were the effect. You have a cause and effect here. They were effectively bringing the grief, but the reason why they are there doing that is because of Esau's negative volition, because of Esau's rebellion to the plan of God, marrying outside of what would be desirable and covenant terms for a woman otherwise, as we saw in regards to marrying. Abraham made it very clear to stay away from the Canaanite women, from those of the populations outside, because they did not have that which one would look for in regards to positive volition and faith in Bible doctrine otherwise in their lives. Most of these were pagans, as we brought out, and looked at back in those verses. So, yeah, they were there. They're bringing the grief, but they're simply the products of Esau's negative volition, his own rebellion. For, as we saw, the grief was further exacerbated by the failure of applying the doctrine of separation by the head of the house, Isaac. While not specific, it's obviously logically implied. Why did Isaac let this go on? Because he refused to apply the doctrine of separation in regards to Isaac's actions otherwise. And this, and again, it came out in the language, at least it did to me, very clearly, in the end of chapter 26, that the grief of soul looked at further schism and division that this whole ordeal of Esau's actions and his pagan wives being in the house, creating schism, division, even further division between Rebecca and Isaac. As we know, there's already a division that is in place between them. Back in chapter 25, as Isaac loved Esau and Rebecca loved Jacob. So Esau's actions, bringing in these pagan wives, takes a situation that was not desirable to begin with, a division of love and allegiance, if you will, to the twins, and further exacerbates the situation. So, five, now it is Esau's open rebellion to the plan of God and continued catering to his person and association that sets the background for the events of chapter 27. So, that's your foundation, a principle that these actions now revolve around that occur here in our immediate chapter. And that is, he is openly rebellious to God. That was made evident when he married these two women. And the fact that he continues to reside in the household and be in part, such an integral part of Rebecca and Isaac's life, that sets up the background for all now that's going to occur. So, six, in spite of his blatant disregard for God's plan, that's Esau's disregard, his father continues to insist on bestowing upon him the favored son status. He loved Esau, chapter 25, verse 28, whereas Rebecca loved Jacob. And it shows a division. It doesn't mean that they didn't love their other kid. It just language shows that their affection was drawn in separate individuals by husband and wife. And Isaac will not deal with it. He just flat won't. He lets it continue to exist, and he maintains his initial stance in regards to elevating Esau under favoritism in the relationship. So, seven, this in turn exposes a spiritual weakness with Isaac, letting his STA govern the parental relationship with his sons rather than Bible doctrine. The prophecy was clearly made that Jacob was to be the heir of the covenant. In spite of having this doctrine, Isaac is stubborn. And as we'll see, he thinks he can change this whole situation. He thinks he can save his kid, see, so to speak. His spiritual weakness is that he lets his emotions rule, his STA to rule, his fleshly appetite, obviously, rather than letting Bible doctrine determine how things are to be in regards to his two sons, and making the appropriate applications otherwise. So, eight, all this results, the result was spiritual blindness to the prophetic realities concerning Jacob and Esau that stipulated Jacob as the heir of the covenant birthright. Those realities proclaimed directly to Rebekah. But obviously, Isaac would be privy to this. She isn't going to hide doctrine from her husband. That's ridiculous. And as these verses, the verses that we're in will bring out, he is very much aware of this prophecy. But he has a stubborn grain in his sin nature that causes blindness, if you will, spiritually, impeding his orientation and application of the doctrine otherwise. So the result was spiritual blindness to the prophetic realities concerning Jacob and Esau that stipulated Jacob as the heir of the covenant birthright. Chapter 25, 23. So nine, this fuels strife and conflict in his marriage and household in the face of his right woman embracing the doctrine otherwise. I.e., Rebecca loved Jacob. So the affection is designed to draw the individual parents attention to their embracing of Bible doctrine versus rebellion against it. And when you have a conflict a doctrine on nature in a home that's supposed to obviously be running on doctrine. And here in this case, it is the one in the subordinate position that embraces the doctrine. That's Rebecca, the wife. Where Isaac should have, as the right man and head of the house, taken lead to deal with it appropriately. He's the one that rejected it. And that's what happens when you have difference of opinion in regards to doctrinal standards between people, conflict. And this whole thing ballooned over the years and was ingrained, if you will, in their marriage, at least up to the point in time of Isaac getting his act together towards the end of the chapter in regards to Jacob. You can see why we did the doctrine of peace. There is no peace between these two, not at this point in time in their history. And again, it shows even positive believers are not perfect. Not to excuse anything. So 10, a competitive spirit was nurtured, resulting in a quagmire of energy of the flesh, seeking to be victorious for the cause by each parent. As we go through this, all that, Isaac, his intentions to overrule the doctrine and bestowing the blessing upon Esau, and then Rebekah and Jacob all getting entwined in their energy of the flesh. That's all result of a situation that is not harmonious. And you can see pops out this competitive spirit that occurred between mother and father in regards to their two children. And it's not a good thing. And it's all because one of the parents will not embrace the doctrine and apply it otherwise. And the key is, the trick is to figure out why he doesn't. And of course, you know, you have the conjectures, etc. Well, he didn't know about the prophecy, maybe. You know. No, that's not true. As we'll see. So, a competitive spirit in the household, not a healthy one, by any stretch of the imagination, because of division of doctrinal application otherwise. And each parent is going to protect their cause to whatever degree necessary to bring about the position that they stand for. So point 10 again, a competitive spirit was nurtured, resulting in a quagmire of energy of the flesh, seeking to be victorious for the cause by each parent. 11, what ultimately results exposes who God supports in such an event. You look at situations like this, and you see Rebecca and Jacob pull their stunt. Well, understand, their stunt is simply a reaction to the stunt that Isaac's pulling. You got two parents. One is sided with doctrine, Rebecca. And Jacob, obviously, his position in that respect. And he knows where Esau's coming from. And then you got Isaac. And in that whole ordeal, everybody's running under their SCAs. But you don't see any condemnation in the scriptures in regards to Rebecca and Jacob's activities. And really not much of one other than the obvious divine discipline coming down on Isaac's head as seen through his blindness here in this regards. And why God permits this to stand? Well, the reason is because this is what God prophesied in regards to the ultimate outcome of the entire event. So it brings in certain principles of doctrine, such as God's will, His permissive will, His directive will, as it pertains to the advancement of His plan otherwise. And who God supported was Rebekah and Jacob, ultimately. Not that He condoned it, but He let it slide because it ended up being the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, hopefully, I'll make myself a little clearer as we go through here, if I'm losing you. So 12, the doctrinal teaching here is that God always supports and upholds His Word, no matter circumstances or situations whirling about Him in His fulfillment. As we know, Psalm 138:2, "For You have magnified Your Word," literally, "above all Your name." This is the importance that God places on His Word. His Word will be fulfilled. And it doesn't make any difference if a bunch of idiots are out there fulfilling it. See. 13, no matter how the reputation of God may be construed by others, His veracity will not be tarnished. No matter what people may think, as they have over history, and you have the divisions of peoples over the old Esau and Jacob situation, as the lineage of out of Esau continued to ascribe to the fact that their rights were stolen. Well, that just shows you the lack of their understanding in regards to God and His plan. And it doesn't make any difference what people may want to think about the true God that permitted this to happen. That is because He prophesied that Jacob would be the covenant heir. So 14, He told Rebekah that Jacob was to be the heir, and so it will be, no matter how it may unfold. In other words, God is not limited to everything being done exactly right to fulfill His plan. Obviously, a lot of the prophecy that does exist is inclusive of evil SCA activity by others that brings about the fulfillment of prophecy. So 15, the incident set before us of Jacob deceiving Isaac into conferring the birthright upon him is an example of God exercising His permissive will to facilitate His directive will. You've got to understand the wills of God. And volition is paramount in regards to the whole situation. Not just with God, but also between Isaac, Rebekah, Jacob, and Esau. See? And God, obviously, His will is known as His sovereignty. He is the Creator. God's directed will is what He wants us to think, say, and do. His permissive will allows for negative volition to exist and men to make up their own choices in regards to things, and He permits evil to then exist. But that has nothing to do, none of that can thwart His directed will otherwise being fulfilled in the advancement of His plan as it is regarded in regards to history, positive volition, and things of this nature. Then He has overruling will. Basically, God is permitting Jacob, Rebekah and Jacob under His permissive will to overrule Esau's intentions here, to go in here and try to upset the blessing in the plan of God according to the covenant design and prophecy. So we have an example of God exercising His permissive will to facilitate His directive will. 16, in this situation, God permits energy of the flesh because its end result fulfills prophecy. He just lets it ride. They make their choice. They do what they're going to do. If that's the way it comes about, that's the way it comes about. But remember, this is, He said Jacob would be the heir. And he became the heir. So 17, in other words, he, God, does not condone Rebekah and Jacob's actions, but permits her sins as judgment against Isaac's rejection of the truth while advancing the plan of God in spite of Isaac. In spite of what Isaac will do. So 18, God is free to use sinful conditions to judge sin, all the while advancing the Word of God perfectly. He will use evil to judge evil. See, well, this isn't obviously evil in the sense that we generally look at that. This is just simple energy of the flesh of one spouse and son to the head of the house, Isaac, and back and forth. Commentaries, you look at it and you can see just everybody almost in this passage just zeroes in regards to Rebekah and how deceitful and Rebekah and Jacob were and all this other. But it's like they forget, well, look what Isaac's trying to do here. And, you know, obviously they go about it the wrong way, but the end result is the right thing. So, put that in your pipe, Mr. Fundy, and smoke it. Now, God does that. He can do that, see. To use sinful conditions to judge other sinful conditions. So, it's more complex than just, you know, deceitful plans and schemings on both parts. It's bringing about and reflecting and showing and teaching God's will in the matter, under directive and permissive will and overruling will, as well as divine discipline, judgment, and fulfillment of God's word in spite of it all. In spite of it all, His word is fulfilled. So 19 now, whether irony is intended or not. Chapter 27 opens with Isaac's physical sight aping his spiritual condition. Now it came about when Isaac was old and his eyes were too dim to see. While Hayaki, Zakin, Yisakak, while Kaha, I am in Ra. Alright, now we'll look at kind of chronology here, what's going on. 20, now the chronological marker for the time at hand here is simply stated when Isaac was old. So when did all this occur? Well, so far in Genesis, everything has been in chronological order. So safely we can assume it occurred after the events of chapter 26. But it just simply states when Isaac was old. 21, now Isaac was 100 years old when Esau, at age 40, married his two wives of chapter 26, verse 34. 25, 26 states he was 60 years old when the twins were born. So Esau was 40 in verse 34, chapter 26. So obviously Isaac was 100 years old. That dates to 1746 B.C., maintaining the correct count as we've been going through here in Genesis. So he's at least 100. Can we be more specific? Yes, we can. 22, now to more accurately ascribe an age. For our present scenario, here we must calculate backwards from the future as centered on the birth of Joseph. We turn to Joseph to help us now back into the present age of this event that's taken place here in chapter 27. Now we know Joseph was born at the end of the second 7-year contract Isaac made with Laban. He was close to the last. Wasn't youngins, Benjamin was. But that would have been the 14th year. So when we get into the text, if you haven't, if you don't know it already, Jacob heads out to look for his woman. He meets Laban, Rebekah's brother, and he sees and meets Rachel, and he wants it. Laban, as we've already been introduced to him, is a conniving individual, and he ropes whoever this guy is I'm talking about, Jacob, thank you. I'll get there. I'm just old. Into a 7-year contract of labor to marry his daughter. And as we know, as the story goes, when the wedding time came, Laban swaps out Rebecca with Leah, her sister. Was not quite as pretty, put it that way. Well, that was a mean trick. Laban then turns around and he takes advantage of the situation again. And he tells Jacob, work another 7 years and you can have Rebekah. Now this is part of our custom. Well, he tries to wrap this off as part of their custom. Well, when he does that, well, a lot of people don't recognize, he doesn't have to work 7 more years, 14 years fully, to be married to Rebekah. He says, I'll give you Rebekah now, but you got to promise to work another 7 years. So all these kids that are born from Jacob, the 12, are done within a matter of 14 years. So Laban gave Rachel to Jacob at the beginning of the second 7-year contract. All right, Genesis 30, 24, and 25. She named him Joseph, saying, may the Lord give me another son. And it came about when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I may go to my own place and to my own country. So that recognizes that his 14 years of work contract has been fulfilled. And then compare 29:27, where the bait and switch, the whole thing works out. Laban tells Joseph, complete the week of this one and we will give you the other also for the service which you shall serve with me for another 7 years. And it's at that point in time that, alright, to soothe him over, you don't have to wait 7 years for Rachel. We'll go ahead and you can marry her now along with Leah. So basically Laban is dumping Leah off. What a father, huh? Anyway, so Joseph was born at the end of that 14 years. So, B, we know that Joseph was 30 years old when he became the prime minister, vicar, if you will, of Egypt. Genesis 41:46. Now, Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. And that was after Pharaoh named Joseph prime minister. So, Tsaphnath-Paneah, verse 45, gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. And he was exalted and placed as the second in command of the most powerful country in the world, Joseph. And we'll deal with that in detail. But for our intents and purposes, he was 30 years old when that occurred. So see, his commission then was initiated to oversee the distribution of food for a period of 14 years, with the first 7 years being good years, and the second 7 years being a famine. This all came about because Joseph was able to interpret a dream in regard to Pharaoh. And that's Genesis 41:14 through 45, which we'll deal with that in detail when we get there. But you had seven fat cows, seven lean cows, and in general, and he interprets that to know that they would have 7 years of plenty in regards to their economy, food, and then there would be 7 years of famine. So another 14 years. So that's why he was, because he was able to interpret that dream, Pharaoh took all confidence in Joseph, put all confidence, and gave him the responsibility, the authority to then oversee the food distribution and supply in regards to Egypt. And basically all the other power that goes along with that. So that's another 14 years that set out. So from when he was 30. So D, Jacob. Jacob went to Egypt then in the second year of the seven-year famine. Now, at that point in time, Jacob thinks Joseph's dead. So you have the first 7 years of plenty, then the 7 years of famine again, and it's in that second year of famine that Jacob then heads to Egypt. We're given that chronological note. Genesis 45:11. In regards to Jacob, he's told, Joseph tells the brothers to tell the father here, verse 11, there I will also provide for you, for there are still 5 years of famine to come. So that's in the second year of the 7 year famine, lest you and your household and all that you have be impoverished. And he holds brother Benjamin kind of as hostage. It's all cruel joke on his part. But anyway, and they go and get the father and bring him back to Egypt to reside there to survive the famine. So that's in the second year of the seven-year famine. So he, Joseph would then have been, or Jacob then would have been 130 years old at that time. That's told to us in Genesis 47:9. So Jacob sent to Pharaoh, the years of my sojourning, or said to Pharaoh, the years of my sojourning are 130. So he's 130 when that occurs. That's when he goes in. Obviously, Joseph introduces him to the Pharaoh. So 30 Joseph then would have been 39 at that time. He was 130 when he took over. He had 7 good years plus 2 years into the famine. They had another 9 years. So Jacob was 91 when Joseph was born. If Joseph was 39, Jacob was 130 at the same time. You subtract 39 from 130, you have 91. So these guys were fairly up in years when they were popping out kids there. So age subtracted 14 years from the time Jacob went to be with Laban, then ages him at 77 at that time. So when Joseph was born, Jacob was 99. Or Jacob was 91. Subtract 14 years then from the 7-year contracts. Jacob was 77 at the time. So the time of Jacob's departure then to his uncle Laban is key to our present chapter 27. In verses 42-46, ushering us into events of chapters 28-29 when he arrives at Haran and meets Rachel. So he's 77 at the beginning of the first 7-year contract for Rachel. And this ties right into our chapter, because he's going to leave here in 42 through 46, based on his mother's exhortation and his dad's instructions. She's scared that Esau's going to try to kill him. She makes her case before Isaac, verse 46. And Isaac calls Jacob, chapter 28, 29. He had the scenario then unfold, leaving to go to Haran. So, Jay, we can safely assume the departure from home and arrival of Laban's occurred within the year of the events then of chapter 27. Okay, this would age Isaac at 137 years old. That is, Esau and Jacob were both 77 plus 60 years for Isaac at the time of their birth. So we can date chapter 27.23 to have occurred in the year 1709 B.C. So some 37 years, basically, have passed since the peace accord with Abimelech and our scenario now in chapter 27. Aren't you glad I do all this research? Can't remember any of it, but I'll eventually get it out to you. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God the Holy Spirit continue to light and see things in Jesus' name. Amen.